Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets end the week in the red. Fed is reducing bond purchases. A potential vaccine helps to keep a bid under the markets. And regional banks starting to take a beating. All this and much more on episode number 662 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome and hello. Yep, we're reopening slowly but surely. We're getting there. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm the president of Horowitz Company, the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged that myself and John C. Dvorak do each and every week. Thank you so much for joining me today, each and every week on this show. And of course, lots going on that we need to talk about because, well, things are getting a little squirrely out there. So I thought what we'd do is kind of take this a little bit of a different way today, kind of talk a little bit about markets and what's going on, but also maybe look at this as a reset. Because I got to tell you, I've received a lot of calls. I'll tell you about that in a second, but I've received a lot of calls during the week. And they all had the same tone. They seemingly had the same script. And this is from people who, many of them I didn't know before I talked to them this week. And they were calling me because they were seeking help. And I thought, well, you know, I think this is a really good lesson and a discussion that we could have today because I think this is more than just the few people that I talk to that are feeling this way and have the same situation going on. So we're going to get to that. But let's first take a look at the week. Pretty miserable overall. I mean, you can't say anything really good about the economic picture because it's no good. It's grim. And yeah, there were a couple of bright spots, some better than expected numbers in some of the regional manufacturing numbers. But overall, the jobs numbers and everything else that we saw in between, the fact that there is, disinflationary that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, the unemployment rate, the GDP, the projections, the potential for the unemployment rate to be about 20% already as of right now. And the list goes on of what's going on. And, of course, the bankruptcies that we saw last week. Last one being JCPenney announced after the close on Friday that they're going through a bankruptcy process. So one of the things that I noticed last week, and I think the most telling issue about what is going on, is the continuation of the general bid, the bid in biotechs, because, of course, that makes sense. Right now, we are in a global health panic, and that is important for us to solve and to find a cure. And that being the case, of course, company after company are going to be trying their best to come up with some kind of treatment or some kind of vaccine that knocks this out entirely. And those companies are getting a significant bid, seeing upward trajectory of their stock price on a continuing basis. A little bit of backtracking here and there, but generally speaking, that line slopes from bottom left to top right unquestionably. Technology also continuing to get somewhat of a bid. The thing that's really the most concerning, kind of a head scratcher from a couple of thoughts, but yet I think reasonable when you think about it, is how poorly the financials are doing, especially the banks. I mean, it took a rumor about Goldman Sachs potentially buying Wells Fargo to stop the Wells Fargo stock from plummeting even more than it did. It was down 8% on one day, and miraculously, this rumor, this potential about Goldman Sachs coming to the rescue and possibly buying the stock and buying the company, which I don't really buy. I got to tell you, the timing of it was very suspect. I just don't, I can't imagine that, in fact, we're going to see that there is a merger of that, unless things get really bad. And I just don't necessarily see that this is going to be a voluntary type of merger. The reality is, if it's forced by the Fed, like we saw back in 2008, 2009, et cetera, possibly. I just don't think, from where we see the balance sheets and even as bleak as it looks for the economy, that right now we're at that stage. Now, maybe this is a early and a very ahead of the curve kind of situation that could arise, where there are banks that will merge. But also, these are the big banks, and already we have some possible, I would say, I'll use it, the term loosely, but antitrust when it comes to the big banks right now. Last thing that we want to see, anybody wants to see right now, is due to this coronavirus situation, that the banks are going to get bigger, that we have the too big to fails getting even too bigger to fail. I think that would be and cause a public outcry like you haven't seen. I mean, Occupy Wall Street will be renewed. And once again, with social distancing, of course, you're going to see people freaking out if this happens. And I can't imagine it passing or passing scrutiny. Regional banks got hit the hardest. The ETF for the regional banks was down 12% for the week. 12% just on the week, as the realization that interest rates are staying low for an extended period of time and entering into the market is the concept, the possibility, the notion that we may have negative interest rates. Negative interest rates. I mean, wow. Now, yeah, it's being poo-pooed and downplayed by Fed Chair Powell and all the other powers that are out there. But if you look out on the Fed Fund futures and where the bets are being made as to where interest rates are going to be in the future, there is a clear and distinct time when the belief is that they are, in fact, going to be negative. Now, you know my comments on negative interest rates. I think it has totally decimated the countries that have utilized it. And if we're going to utilize it, it is only because we want to monetize the debt in a way that we are going to distribute money through social programs, and the government wants to keep interest rates not only low, but they want to be paid to do so. That would be horrible. I mean, the words don't even come to my mouth of how destructive that will be for our economy. And no wonder why the banks are trading as they are, with the notion that sometime in the future, the potential, even the sheer existence of the thought that negative interest rates are a possibility, are killing the banks. They can't survive. That's not how banks are set up. They're set up to have a normalized yield curve where the shorter-term rates are low, longer-term rates are higher on a normal curve, and therefore they can make money on the spreads. That's pretty simple. And the regional banks in particular, they're getting hit with a lot of different things. Not only are they getting hit with the yield curve that's a problem right now, but they're also getting hit with the potential of an elongated unemployment situation that then therefore creates problems for the loans that they have out on the street. The potential for default grows each and every day that we don't get this under control. They don't have the assets to back up what's going on. Even though the Fed is coming in with, although they're reducing down, they were 8 billion 2 weeks ago per day. There were 7 billion per day last week. They're at 6 billion per day of new purchases starting this week. So maybe that's what's going on. Maybe there's something to be said about the fact that the Fed is buying less and less. Well, it's still not less. It's still $60 billion for the week. For the week. Well, no, I'm sorry. Take that back. I don't know where that came from. It'll be five. It'll be, I guess it's this weekday. So $25 billion for the week from 30. So maybe there's a reaction with that they're buying less and this concern. There's not enough liquidity coming in. But again, bottom line here, we are seeing that there is the continuation of certain sectors really getting decimated. The small cap banks decimated. Large caps getting hurt. And biotech leading the way. Airlines got pummeled last week. No question about that. And here we are starting to see the initial signs of states and businesses reopening. Reopening to a much different, it's not even much different. It's out of this world, upside down change in how they do business. Already we're seeing some companies like Twitter. Twitter said, hey, you know what? We are going to be going to a work from home forever. We don't think we need these big offices anymore. We're seeing that restaurants have to be at 25 or 50%. Bars are a problem in many states. Public transportation has to spend gobs of money on sterilization techniques. And the question about do people even want to live in the city centers anymore is really starting to percolate, where you see that sales and potential for homes outside of the metropolitan areas are starting to pick up, where rentals and sales inside of metropolitan areas have plummeted. Now, that makes sense. You know, you look at New York City, who's buying a house now in Manhattan? You can't get in there. It's a lockdown. There's nothing going on. So, of course, rentals and sales have plummeted. No question about that. But when we get over the other side, whether it's a partial hop or whether it's a full, just a full-blown hurdle, over to the other side, beyond the lockdowns, the question is, are people going to live in the city centers? Well, yeah, many will. But with the option of now working from home, hashtag WFH, starting to see that a lot, WFH, hashtag WFH, work from home, is there going to be a migration outside in a pretty significant way where people don't have to use the public transportation anymore? They're going to buy a car. And we got parking issues, I understand that. Or just work from home. And we talked about this in past shows and past discussions about the potential for high-end real estate inside of the city centers, particularly related to the commercial space for businesses and offices, maybe seeing an entirely different future, whereas they don't need to have as many people actually on the floors in their offices, whereas they can be working from their homes. And as such, the potential for the need for an expansion of office space in San Francisco, LA, New York, parts of New Jersey, Dallas, Chicago, kind of go, you know, Atlanta, go through the whole list. You know the list. Is there going to be a major change and a problem for that area? So I'm part of a CEO roundtable. This group started up about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And the idea, there's about 10 of us in it, and the idea is to have a look at the future, kind of where things are in the future. And if I could find it, I may have, I think I put it over here. Let's see. I have the mission statement. Yeah, here it is. It's, so the vision of this CE roundtable is to explore and develop opportunistic strategies to advance the future of a new normal, increase the quality of life, and define a pathway to achieve greatness through a rebirth of economic ingenuity, entrepreneurialism, and innovation. Okay, and there's a mission and initiatives and all that. But basically, I want to tell you that because we're having this discussion right now, and there's people from, a lot of people from Florida, but a lot of people from, there's probably about 60, about six of us are from Florida, I guess. The rest are from out of the area. And the idea is to come up with where the opportunities lie and where the pitfalls are in the, you know, 2.0 reset. And we just started this. We're a couple of weeks in. And some great ideas have already come in about, you know, how to potentially change over the idea of dining. Or, you know, again, this discussion of real estate and commercial real estate and especially business and offices in major metropolitan areas. So these are the kind of things that I'll bring to you on the show as we discuss these. I don't know if we're going to come up with a solution. I mean, we're only supposed to be doing this for, I think this is a 6-month time period that this is going to be in place. But I'll let you know how it goes, what we're talking about, and come up with some ideas. Last week, let me just grab this again. We talked about if I could find it. So there was questions that we all had to come up with, kind of a little bit of homework. What businesses and sectors have the greatest change in opportunities? And then homework for next week, what technology tools will have the greatest impact on there? So this is still going by that whole notion that technology is going to be a major part of the implementation of the next generation of, well, the world, of people, of what we do, of communication, of meetings, of dining to a degree, of working. I can't do anything about sleeping. I mean, there's not much you could do with technology to push a button and create a bed that is maybe encapsulated anywhere you want. So that's a problem. There's nothing you can do much with technology except enhance the process from a sterilization point of view, or for a social distancing, maybe to optimize airplanes through technology. Where you sit and how many people are on the plane. So technology has its limitations, of course, depending on what the particular area is. But nonetheless, something we're going to talk about. So anyway, I'll bring that to you as we go through it about the CEO roundtable. So now that we're seeing these signs that there's reopenings. And some states are abusing it. Some people, not states. Some people are abusing it and really not paying attention to the whole social distancing. And already we're seeing that there is an increase in case count in a few different areas. And particularly look at Texas. We're starting to see that ramp up a bit. And we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks to see what happens. Maybe another week to see what happens in Georgia, one of the first places that opened up, as we know, the tattoo parlors and the massage businesses and the nail salons. We'll see what happens there. But we have to wait a little while to see if this is a trend or just a quick aberration. But are you going out? Are you worried? You thinking about going out? Concerned? Everybody's ready to get some air. And I don't mean just air walking around outside in your neighborhood. I mean air out. Take a long drive and not just turn around and come home. Land somewhere. Spend some time at a park, at a beach. I don't know, at a mall, at a restaurant. I think we're all kind of ready for that. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I've talked with a lot of people over the last week or so, and there's really, I would say, a mixed picture of what they're thinking about doing. Most, like I said, most want to go out and do something, but many are I would say, afraid. There's lack of a better word from that. They're afraid. And even as these states are opening up, and we're seeing that there's a slow process through a variety of phases, depending on where you are, the question is going to be the real capacity of retail establishments and what's going to happen there over the next several months. Very hard to tell, very hard to discern what human nature is going to do and the reaction if, in fact, there is, unfortunately, a new wave, a second wave. Yeah, by the way, I've been thinking about the second wave. We talk about how these pandemics historically have had these waves, right? You have the first wave, which is kind of ugly, and everybody kind of then recoils and tries to take care of them historically, and then all of a sudden you get this bigger second wave, and then possibly even a third wave. Everybody's saying, we're going to get a second wave. If everybody's allowed outside and we go back to doing business as usual and people aren't wearing masks and not social distancing or even doing all the things that we're supposed to be doing, the potential for a second wave is pretty darn high. And I wondered, was this the second wave? In other words, was there a small wave that happened maybe in December, January? I heard of a lot of people, probably you did too, that were really sick in December. They didn't know what it was at the time. Some people that traveled came back, had this horrible, horrible flu, cold, cough, fever. And I wonder if that was the first wave. I don't know. But either way you want to look at it, there is a concern about another wave, whatever the count is. There is a concern about another wave coming, and that's spooking people. The good news from an economic standpoint is that we are opening up, at least somewhat, and that will help, even if just a little. because some revenue will come in. And is there going to be a big change to restaurants from the difference of revenue coming in from having people and maybe being 25%, maybe 50% occupied versus just doing the takeout service? Possibly. But with all that in mind and all that going on and the concept of concern and worry, I want to ask you a different question today. And this is going to be the focus of our discussion. It's a very simple question. What are you doing? I mean that in terms of your future, particularly related to your portfolio, your finances, investments, money. What are you doing? And the reason that I ask this is, again, in those discussions that I had with several people this week, it wasn't just all about, hey, how you doing? Are you going outside? No. It was about what they were doing about their portfolio. And this theme that I told you about earlier that I saw was the question of, when do I get back in? When do I start investing back in the markets? Because I took my money out in, January, February, March, April, whatever time it was. I just didn't want to be a part of it. When do I start going back in? And it was kind of a little weird that all these calls came in and had the same basic underlying theme. So I was kind of curious. I was like, well, what does that mean? Were people totally out, in the conversations? I'm like, did you just sell everything? Did you keep a few things? Did you keep a few stocks you liked? Keep your bonds? What does that mean? So I asked each person, and some explained to me that they pulled out of the market entirely, sold off everything. Some were early, some were a little bit late, but now they had just a ton of cash and they're waiting just patiently for the right time. Not everybody did this. Not everybody they spoke to. There was probably, we're talking about probably 8 or 10 people that I spoke to last week that had the same general theme about what was going on. But they were all asking me about, hey, when is the right time to get back in? What's the signal? What do you need to see in order to feel comfortable? They were asking me this. I'm thinking, what do you need to see? What is it going to make you comfortable about getting in the market? Because I don't have an answer. Not an answer for you. And particularly because there's no good answer for this situation. Because what they're talking about is market timing. And while I think there is some room for market timing concepts in a scalp trade, a swing trade, a day trade, okay. But trying to market time the big in and out for massive moves on economic and investment cycles is next to impossible. You may get it right once or twice, but over time consistently, I don't think so. I've seen it. Even the best timers are not so good at it. Listen, back in time, you see that people get famous for a great market call, and that's it. Never again do they seem to be able to get it right, or even get it within a reasonable time period near a turning point for markets. It's a very difficult game. And trying to predict the turning points, whether or not you're exactly on the low or exactly on the high, we have to put together a general sense of where we are to establish how much exposure we want to have. And that exposure doesn't necessarily mean 100% or 0%. Don't think of it like all in or all out. That's where you make a mistake. And here's the problem. If you're trading, again, short-term, fine. And I'm also not saying that you should stand directly and chain yourself in on the train tracks as that train is coming towards you and just try to maintain your footing the best as you can and playing chicken with the markets. That's a losing game. The markets are going to roll over you either side. The trains are going to roll over you. The markets are not going to stop because you're there, and the probability is the train, unless they see you well in advance, probably not going to stop until it's too late. So here's an idea, just a concept on this. One foot in, one foot out. That's what I told the people that I talked to this week. One foot out, one foot in, and maybe you'll break your toe or your foot, maybe a leg. But at least you could be in the game. Especially and in particularly if this is long-term money that's, you know, for your retirement. I mean, think about an IRA. You know, you have, let's say you're 45 years old and you have, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 years till you're maybe going to be pulling money out of your IRA. And you're thinking about market timing in and out because of a 5% drop or 10% drop, even a 30% drop in the markets. I get it. But you should have been aware of this long in advance, not necessarily about what was going on with the coronavirus, but valuations looked really, really out of control in 2019, towards the end especially. And if that was the case, you would have probably had a lighter exposure on your portfolios. Not maybe not definitely, but if you're one of those that has to be all in stocks all the time, well, that's not going to be anything that you can really hope that is going to help you to try to be one foot in, one foot out, because you're gonna, your mantra is, I'm in. But if you have a diversified portfolio that's properly oriented, and I talk about this, and I'm beating it down again today because I think the time is right to really focus in on this right now. Because there is, I would think, a solution to this. So if you're nodding your head and you're saying, yeah, I pulled out, or I got in too early, or, I'm really worried about my money right now, which that's natural. Nothing wrong with that. You can be concerned about your money and your future. No question about that. But maybe you're underinvested now. Maybe you're not invested at all. And then, you know, again, this question comes in, when do I get in? So why not think about a very relatively simple process that I think could put your mind and your whole anxiety to rest a little bit. And that is putting money to work slowly. Put money to work over time in a couple of different ways. So if you're out of the portfolio, I'm just going to give you an example of something maybe to think about right now. Some of the things that we're doing for our clients right now that are coming to us like, hey, I cashed out, or I got a lot of cash on hand. What do I do? We're not just going necessarily in our diversified portfolios and just throwing it in. Yeah, on our trading portfolios, the stocks we have, which is a very low exposure to equities, we are actually funding those right away when money comes in, but we also have some hedges on them right now. Let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about trading. Let's talk about the long-term portfolio process, which is meant to be, you know, there for you in the future. So we see the portfolio with a diverse allocation to start, right? Just to seed the portfolio. So again, what the number is, if it's a $250,000 portfolio, maybe we start to put 10% or 15% of that to work. And that doesn't mean it's all in equities, right? That may mean that we have some domestic and international equities. Yes, maybe we have a little bit of alternative assets, maybe a small smidgen of commodities, maybe a small amount of real estate, both domestic and foreign. Maybe we have some large cap and small cap blend in the portfolio on the equity side. And of course, some bonds. So, okay, we have that going on. We're not really making a major commitment at this point because, you know, there's psychology involved in this too. You start all of a sudden throwing your money back in after being really concerned. And when we have a 30% up from the bottom, any kind of downstroke, you're going to be second guessing yourself. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have got in. You know what I'm talking about. And then from there, what we're doing is a two-part dollar cost averaging program. This is what we're doing for clients right now. This is what we are instituting for clients that are coming in. Not every client. All depends on the client, what they have. They're fully invested to begin with. We're not necessarily knocking them down to zero and starting again. What we're doing is re-diversifying their portfolio according to what their particular risk and time horizon is. But I'm talking about those people. And again, there's a lot of people that have done this that just kind of just whack their portfolios down to the nubs. So we put this base position on. And now whether the markets move up or down, well, we're not going to get too slammed on this, right? I mean, one foot in, one foot out. And then first, we're going to look for a time-based dollar cost averaging process. So let's say we take a period of We can go as long as, let's say, 2 years or 1 year. We say we're going to take a portion of the money and deliberately invest it in our allocation over that period of time so that we get you into the appropriate allocation, slowly easing you in so that the markets go the wrong direction. Well, okay, you didn't get hit that badly. Well, you know, what do you have, a 10% or 15% exposure to equities? Even a 20% drop on the markets, what are we talking about, 3% of the overall portfolio value? Now, I don't want to lose any money, but come on. You know that there's going to be variation and volatility in investing. So we take an easing approach into this. And that we know that if the markets move against us, well, we're not getting hit too hard. If the markets start moving up and they continue to move higher, well, at least we're participating. At least you're not sitting in cash saying, well, now it's higher, I'm not investing. Nope. Oh, it's even higher now. No way am I investing. I'm waiting for it to come down. And meanwhile, it moves against you and up to the upside when you're in cash by, let's say, 30%. It moves down 10%. And you're like, yeah, I'm investing now. Well, wait a minute. Wait. You could have been investing when it was only up 5% or 10%. What benefit did you just do for yourself? Does it make you feel better? That's just crazy. So the second part of the dollar cost averaging approach, the first part is a time-based dollar cost averaging approach, okay? Second part is what we call an opportunistic dollar cost averaging approach. So if the market starts to come down, what we do is we look to find those areas that have valuations that have come in line that make a reasonable amount of sense and push a little money into that. So now we have both sides covered. If the market comes down, we have opportunistic buying going on. If the market moves up, well, we have our dollar cost averaging on a time basis that's going on. So we're participating on the upside from the seed portfolio that we started, the time-based dollar cost averaging that we have, and if markets come in, we get better pricing on areas that we see that there is a better valuation. Especially if you're using very significant dips and drops to add to positions, that makes a lot of sense. So you have all this going on, whereas you're able to participate 1 foot in, 1 foot out, until you get to your appropriate allocation. That could be more conservative or more aggressive, depending on who you are. I think it bears just a moment to mention, just in case you're unclear. I am not talking about trading portfolios right now. In this particular instance, we're talking about longer-term money. We're talking about 10, 15, 20 years out. So a few percentage in either direction is kind of a blip on the chart. And think about it for a second. When you have time, the idea of time, the longer the time frame you have, in a way, the more you reduce risk. Think about this. You stretch that out for a month. You just look for a month on a chart, and what happens? You see a lot of volatility in there. Think about a 1 week or a 1 day chart. A 5% move 1 day or 1 week is pretty substantial. You stretch that out over a week, a month, a year, that 5% blip doesn't even show up. So you stretch that even further and further, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Look at the chart on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. That choppiness goes away. So if you're staring at your portfolio every single minute, oh, I'm up 100, down 100, up 500. Oh, I'm down 2,000. That is not a good way to invest for your future because it's just going to create a lot of anxiety. You have to stretch this concept. Again, we're talking about longer-term money here. This discussion is not about trading. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about this idea. Have you ever been in a plane back in the good old days? You look down at the ocean. You're flying over the ocean, you look down. You're like, oh, wow. Look at that, that beautiful blue expanse. Look how smooth it looks. Look at how just nice and blue, and you don't see any waves. You're up at 20,000 feet. Wow, that's calm. Now, that same person that's directly below you on a boat in the same exact water, maybe there's 5-foot waves. Those 5-foot waves are no fun. And they're seeing a much different picture. Their boat is going up and down and up and down and crashing into waves, maybe they're 5 or 10 feet. But they're on the ground, nose to the floor. But yet at 20,000 feet, it looks really smooth. Same thing with your portfolio. If you're looking at it every day, really close to it, nose on the screen, kind of scary, bumpy, rocky, wavy. But if you step back even further, one more step back, totally different story emerges. Think about that. The daily movements are not your concern if you're in a long-term portfolio. You should step away, do whatever you do best, and let the portfolio do what it does if, in fact, there is an appropriate diversification according to your risk and time horizon. I can't say that enough. It's like a broken record. You know, you have to make sure that you're set up the right way. And if you're out, think about seeding the portfolio with a two-step dollar cost averaging program. That's exactly what we're doing for clients that are really concerned about being in the markets right now. So this multi-step process of getting back into the market, back into your portfolio position, doesn't have to be an all or nothing. Doesn't have to be I'm off or I'm on. But you have to have a plan. I mean, you have to have this plan that eases you back in proper positioning, giving you appropriate levels of risk according to your particular situation, because otherwise, you're probably torturing yourself. I mean, the people that I've been talking to are kind of angry with themselves that they didn't get back in at the bottom. And I said to them, wait, well, hold it. Hold it. I explained that, listen, the problem is that once you're out, it's never, never a good time to get back in. You're probably shaking your head with me saying, yeah, that makes a little bit sense, especially if you pulled out of your investments entirely. Here's why. I mean, if the market goes up, you're out. So you're out, you sold everything off, and you felt good about it. You know, you sold in February. You feel really good about it. Into March, kind of through the beginning of April, and you're like, okay, I'm out. But now all of a sudden, the torture begins. If the market goes up, it's too high. I want to wait till it comes down again. Then if it drops, you know, you're happy, you know, I was right. Hey, look at me. I got this down. But then you're thinking, you know what? I'm staying in cash because you know what? There's a lot more downside. I was right. It went up. Yeah, sure. It went up. It moved without me, but then it came back down, or it went down further even after you sold out. You know, I'm right. And now things are going to get a lot worse. So there's never a good place or a time to recommit your capital. It's either it's going to get a lot worse. It's too high. So you've already set your stage up that is very difficult for you to succeed. It's halfway to impossible. But this whole idea of, all right, let's keep 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Let me just explain the difference in the psychology. When you do that, and especially if you combine it with a multifaceted dollar cost averaging program, you don't have to be right. And once you get your money back working, you can always adjust the risk up or down versus saying, hey, you know what? I'm waiting for this to go down before I commit all of it and then not be right because you're freaking out because, oh my God, we're down another 20%. This is terrible. There's no way this is ever coming back. This is the worst depression, recession we're ever going to see in our lifetimes. We're never going to find a cure. You know, you come up with all the reasons, right? Or if it goes up, you're like, oh man, look at those valuations. Listen, I have been the number one person that has been all over these insane valuations that we're seeing right now. Insane. Yet at the same time, I'm still advocating for having some investments because we don't exactly know what's going to happen, whether or not the stock earnings are going to grow into their valuations or if in fact stocks are going to drop and valuations are come back to normal. We don't know that right now. There's a lot of stimulus in the program right now. There's a lot of hope for a vaccine. I mean, once you have a vaccine, all bets are off, right? It goes, you know, we don't have a problem anymore until there's something else. But the point is that if you're emotionally attached to the process, what's going to end up happening when you're all out, or maybe even all in? You're going to beat yourself up on a regular basis, and then stepping back in at the wrong time is going to force you to beat yourself up even more, and then you're going to make mistakes. So let's stop making the mistakes. Your money should be working for you smartly, with purpose, with a plan. So I ask you again, what are you doing now? What are you going to do now? Are you going to wait for the drop that may or may not happen and get back in? Now, full disclosure, I believe there's going to be a drop and I think we're going to have another opportunity. That's why we have our portfolio set for a lighter exposure overall with regard to equity exposure. And why we are going through this process of dollar cost averaging in, seeding the portfolio, and then doing a opportunistic style of additions into the portfolio. But at least we have one foot in and one foot out, and we can benefit from the opportunities that are presenting themselves. And even if somehow we get this miracle drug and everything turns out, I mean, still valuations are a bit ahead of themselves when we look at the market itself, the whole in totality. And it doesn't seem plausible, I know, that we get to the next high of that unless we see maybe another tax cut for corporations or a miracle. But again, you can't make money sitting on the sidelines. You just can't. Can't lose money either, right? You were going to say that. You were thinking that. I get it. And even if I say, well, you can lose money because of inflation. We don't have inflation. I mean, there's no apparent inflation right now. So it's not like you can technically lose money either. So I leave you with this to ponder. Are you making sure that your financial well-being is taken care of? And I know, and you know, and we all know, there's a need for protection. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we have a portfolio that's isolated right now from any investments. I mean, just like there are ways to protect ourselves and continue with life as normal as possible during this insane time period with the coronavirus, there are ways to invest that have some safeguards and it's still providing you the appropriate plan for your future. So again, one foot out, seed the portfolio, one foot in, seed the portfolio, dollar cost average on a time basis, dollar cost average on a basis of watching for when those opportunities and that opportunistic time approaches. And on top of that, making sure that your total, before you even begin any of this, that your portfolio that you're aiming to get towards, the goal of what that portfolio looks like when you're quote unquote fully invested. And I don't mean that means fully invested in stocks. I don't mean that means 100%. What I mean is maybe you only have 50, 40, 70% in equity exposure in totality. And you mix it up with a lot of other positioning that can provide you that flower garden. Ah, there we go. I'll talk to you about that. We talked about this before. I'll mention again. The flower garden. That's what it's all about. The concept that you want to have a flower garden where you plant a variety of different flowers and shrubs and bushes and ground cover, that something's going to be in bloom in all seasons. And yes, there are going to be those times that they'll have a hurricane or a tornado that blows through and just wrecks your garden. And that's why you have some very sturdy, stalked trees in there that may or may not hold up. I get it. But still, the concept is that you just don't have one flower that blooms and then dies. Give yourself the best opportunity. Give yourself a shot at your financial goals, your financial freedom that some people talk about. You can't do it by sitting on cash at 0.001% or 0.02% or 0.5%. In a money market, there's a bit of safety. It's a nice blanket. But where is that going to get you? Multiply that and compound that. Take $100,000 and multiply it by 1%. Your money will double in, you know how many years? You know how many years it will take your money to go from $100,000 to $200,000? Yeah, the rule of 72. 72 years. 72 years. So basically, if you want to go from 100,000 and you are 1 year old at 73, you'll have a whopping 200,000. Not so good. And if in fact, we are going to see that negative interest rates come around. Savings accounts are just never going to have a or money markets for that matter, have a decent rate of return. So I hope this inspires you. Really, I hope this gives you something to bite into. If you don't know exactly how to do it, if you hear what I'm saying and you're like, okay, I get it. Well, how do I implement that? Well, that's what we do. And I'm gonna plug us. That's what I'm telling you right now. So here it comes. Call us. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out what we have to offer. Put in a quick contact us request. I'll call you back. We'll talk about how to deal with it with your portfolio, how we massage the re-entry. I guess it's like a phased re-entry like we have for the openings of business in a way, right? That phased in process of getting your portfolio appropriately invested for your particular risk factor, style, time horizon, making sure that you're not beating yourself up, not torturing yourself, not all in or all out at any given time. And I can tell you that this is working out pretty well because our clients seem to be at least not, a lot of clients that were very anxious when we started this process are feeling like, you know what? Okay, I get it. I understand what we're doing. As long as we have outlined the goals, the ideas behind all this, the process, the plan, I think that, you know, it makes you have a better sense that at least I'm going somewhere directionally, that there is a program in place that I can rely on for a degree. That doesn't mean you're not going to have losses. So we know that. But that also means it gives you a fighting chance to not double your money in 72 years, but maybe, I don't know, if you get a normalized rate of return that you see of markets and bonds and something over the next 20 years, and even let's push it down. Let's really say, you know, you're only going to get 6% per year. I'm not saying that's the number or not, but, you know, you could get 8 or 10, 3, 12, but let's just say even 6%. You know what? Your money doubles in a matter of, what is that, 14 years? 6 times 10 times 10, 2 more, 12 years. 12 years. So your money doubles in 12 years. Much better than 72, don't you think? Give yourself the fighting chance. Give yourself the opportunity. The idea of standing on the sideline, watching the whole game go by and all that, and you sitting there on the, tapping your toe that nobody picked you, and you're sitting there and everybody's having fun in volleyball and you're just sitting there. And you're watching all this go on, and yeah, you're watching the losing and winning and all that, but you know what? Be a part of it. And yeah, this is what I do for a living, but I've seen it. I've done this for 30 years. I've seen good times. I've seen bad times. Companies, stocks have an unbelievable ability to do well over time. We got the Fed backstopping money markets, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, buying treasuries. No, it's not the best of times. No, we are not in good times from a growth standpoint. No, this economy is not good. As a matter of fact, it sucks. Horrible. The worst I've ever seen, the worst you've ever seen, the worst we're ever going to see. But again, that doesn't mean necessarily that we have this, you know, the stock market or the bond market or the real estate market or the commodity market has to be exactly correlated. Again, I'm just going to state this for the record. I want to make very clear. I think that we do have another shot of coming down. But here's the skinny. If you do what I tell you and you have the plan instituted the way I'm explaining to you, you can capitalize on that next leg down. If you don't, there's no way for you to capitalize on this. There's no way for you to get in because it's never going to be the right time. So think about that. Use it. Hopefully there's something that I was able to impart to you today and to provide you the initiative to do what you think is right for your portfolio, whatever that is, and for your future, the future of your loved ones, your family, your retirement, etc. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, The Disciplined Investor is the place to go. There's a lot on that site that you could check out. I was interviewed and it should be up this week. There was a whole discussion about the PPP program on the Ron Barron Show. I'll put that up also. I was on IBD TV last week. We had DH Unplugged Mondays. Each and every Monday at 4:30 in the afternoon is a pop-up webinar where we do Q&As. Anything you have on your mind you want to talk about, come on over there. There's a link over on The Disciplined Investor on the top right hand as well. So until next week, be safe, be healthy, be financially in line with your goals for your future. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.